Didn't the limb?
Down the sugar plum fairy by Tchaikovsky.
I wouldn't get pink panther on my thing as a ring.
Oh yeah.
How
do I do that? You have to ask someone who knows more about these things.
Yeah. What
do you know? She wants a special ring on her phone.
Yeah. Pink panther.
Mm. Okay, we'll work it out.
It's going to be downloaded if it's not on your phone.
Yeah, all right. Right. We will pick it up from in a minute from source. Where did we get up to last time?
We did A, but I didn't
tell you where we got up to.
I think we should be at 9.
We did source. No, in fact, we got much further than that.
Yeah.
We got to source 16.
Oh, right.
We got to source 16. So the let me just sum. It's up to the end of 15. Let me just summarise for you what we did last time, and you'll see really what I need to pick up as being the real fundamental question of tonight's shiur. We looked last time at a few things. The fundamental underlying hashkafas of the mitzvah of Kibbud Av V'Em, number one. And we saw three things. Number one, that the Sefer HaChinuch brings down that the mitzvah is really being Adam L'Makom. It's in order to connect us to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, which is why it appears with the Bein Adam L'Makom mitzvahs in the Luchos. And parents are really only a means to an end, which is why it's the biological parents that are so magical in this. Rather than anyone else who's been looking after us, because they are the thing that gave us life, and what gave them life, them life, them life, them life, etc. You get back to the infinite cause. That's number one. The second hashkafa we looked at is that it's a mishpat, not a choik. The Maharal had a lot to say about that, saying how mishpatim have to be seen in a very common sense way, in a very seicheldik way, and you can't just apply a bunch of rules, it won't work. And the third thing we saw this weird Gemara about I don't call a Gemara weird. Unusual Gemara about Rabbi Yishmael's mother, who wanted to wash his feet and then drink the water that she used to wash his feet because she thought so much of him. That I think on any basis is slightly weird. And in the yeshiva they told him, look, if that's what your mother wants, then that's what she should get. And even though she's a slightly unusual individual, you have to put up with that. And therefore we see from there they bring down that what parents want is the way that you give them cover, not the way that you think that they should be given cover based on what you'd like them to want, but what they actually want. And I mentioned to you last time a question of the Chazon Ish, which we'll get into more in more detail in a minute. But maybe let's pick it up now. Have a look at source number 17 for a second. Source number 17 is the Kasha of the Chazon Ish. Based on what we've just said, that what they get is what they want. Says the Chazon Ish as follows. We learned last time that there are two mitzvahs, there's Kavod and there's Yira. Kavod means, we saw Yira last time, we touched on Kavod. Yira means respecting parents and treating them like seniors and not in any sense giving them the impression that you feel you're on the same level as them, which involves, as the Shulchan Aruch said, not sitting in their seats and not using their first names, standing up for them. These are all mitzvahs of Yira. Kavod we didn't really get to yet, we'll get to now. But just picking up on the Yira question, look at number 17. This is number 17, the Chazon Ish. Diritzaynai zehu kibbut. What they want is the way that you give them kavod. Ve'im ha'av roitzeh b'tzakanos b'noi. If the father wants some kind of behavior from the son, and he's upset when the son wants to marry a girl that the father doesn't like. He's upset. So the father tells the son, you mustn't marry that woman. It's unacceptable. Your mother and I don't approve. Lama yehera shai letzari. Says the Chazon Ish, why should the child be allowed to give the parents so much pain? The eino bichlal moira. Why is that not included in the mitzvah of moira? And he takes it for granted that it's not. It's very clear the Shulchan Aruch says that if the son wants to marry a woman and the father doesn't approve, all the other way around, the son can do whatever he wants.
What
there are certain, if the daughter wants to marry a man and the father doesn't approve, and the mother doesn't approve.
Not
if the father can marry whoever he likes. He doesn't have to get approval from the children. Why should it not be included in the mitzvah of Yira? How can this be more leniently treated than just contradicting them? No, your parents say yes and you say no, so that's an issa d'oraisa. Yira, You can't do that. Your parents say, yes, you can't contradict them. But your parents say, don't marry this woman. We cry every night. We cry ourselves to sleep because of this girl. The son can turn around and say, well, what can I do? You know, she's the woman I need to marry. And I'm sorry. If you cry, you cry. What can I do? How can that be allowed? And it's be granted that it's allowed. And we'll see, it's not a free-for-all. The son can't just marry anybody. But there are many situations where the son will be allowed to do that. And we'll see soon. So I just wanted to pose that question, really, to put it in our minds at the beginning of the shiur, so that we can come back to it. Just go back to number 16 for a second. This is a famous story of Dhamma ben Nasina. This is where you see the seichel that needs to come into it. Sha'alu es Rabbi Eliezer. They asked Rabbi Eliezer the following. Ad heichun kibud av eim. How far does kibud av eim go? Amalehem, Rabbi Eliezer said to them as follows. Tzu'u re'u ma'asa ha'ivit kachavim echad la'aviv v'ashkelon. Go and see what this non-Jew did for his father in Ashkelon. Why Ashkelon? That was where the non-Jewish people lived. It was a non-Jewish town, Ashkelon. It was near the Gaza. Gaza was always a place where it still is near Gaza, as we well know. Ashkelon, Gaza is the place where a lot of non-Jewish people lived. A lot of the Romans lived on the coast there.
Philistines.
But this is after the Philistines already. This is more in the Roman time. Caesarea was a very Roman place. All of the Roman, Jaffa, all of those Roman, that strip of the coast was very much less Jewish. The Jewish places, of course, were in Shechem and Hebron and Yerushalayim in Yehuda v'Shomron. That's the bit that's the most Jewish bit. But anyway, this non-Jewish guy in Ashkelon, but Dhamma ben Nasina Shmoy, his name was Dhamma ben Nasina. The Chachamim wanted to buy from him a stone for the ephod, for the breastplate of the Kohen Gadol, for 600,000 pieces. Rav Kahana Masli b'shmonim ribui. Rav Kahana said 800,000 gold pieces. It was a like fortune of money. The Hayam Avteach Munach Tachas Rishoisav Shel Aviv. The key for the safe where the stone was under his father's head. The Loitziru wouldn't wake him up. So he lost the money. V'shana ha'cheres, the next year, Nos Nekosh Baruch Hu Schar, Hashem gave him a schar. Shenoil daloi para aduma be'edroi. He had a para aduma. Nichnasu chachmi Yisrael etzloi. The chachomim went to him and amal lahim. He said to them, look, Yedei ani mechem, I know you guys. She'im ani mevakish mechem kol mom sheba oilem atem noisinli. For a red heifer, I can name my price. You'll give me anything. I can absolutely name my price. Ella, but he says, I'm not going to do that to you. Ein ani mevakesh mechem ella oisam mamashev sadzi bishvil kovad abba. I'm only going to ask you for the money that I lost because of the kibud av eim that I did and lost the stone. That's one example. But Amar Rav Chanina, ma misha einu metzuvah v'oisa. Someone who is not commanded to do kibud av eim, kach, this is what he gets. Metzuvah v'oisa, someone who is commanded, you and me, Al-Achas Kama V'Kama, how much more so? To bring that example, Kalvachot. And the second example it brings is Ki Asa Rav Dimi, Amar Rav Dimi said, Pam Achas Haya Levush B'Sirukin, this Dhamma ben Nasina was dressed in his finery, and he was like an important person, Shazav in his gold clothes, the Hayyoshiv ben Gedoli Romi, he was sitting amongst the honorable Gedoli Romi, the Senate, or whatever it was in Ashkelon. What happened? Ubasa Imo, his mother came, the karoso mimenu, she tore his clothes, the tapchaloy al rosha, she smacked him around the head, the yarkaloy the fun of, she spat in his face. You know, we think we've got troubles with parents sometimes. On his face. Valoichlimo, he didn't say a word to her. By the way, I brought you toast first. Well, why does she do this? What's the issue? Tosfos says, Yesh Bimitra Shihaisimutarevis Midasa. She was confused, she was not right there. She was insane. To refers. She was demented. And she treated him this way, and he didn't say anything. So, in other words, he had a father who slept on the key to the safe and he lost all the money, but he got it back again, and he had a mother who was demented. So, what's going on in this case? So, I know the people that I have had students that have been taught, you see from this Gemara how important it is never to wake your mother and father. So, that's not what this Gemara is talking about. That's a good question. If my father was asleep, and someone came to the door and says, I can give you $1 million, and you just need to wake your dad up. And I told him afterwards, Father, you know, I didn't wake you up because I didn't want to wake you up, and I lost $1 million, and aren't I a good son? He'd rip me apart. Crazy. Of course, 99 out of 100 parents want to be woken up. If the child is about to lose $1 million, who wouldn't want to wake up? This is not saying that you can't wake your parents up. This is saying that at Heichon, how far you would have to go if you really weren't able to wake your parents up. If your parents really did insist on a certain kind of behavior, you'd be required to forego the option to make that extra money. We'll see, there's a limit to how that works. You're not required to lose all your money, but to make extra money that you're not going to make anymore, that you're required to do. If your parents say, I need you to take a day off work in order to look after me, so that one will be required to do. Even if one lost money over it, one would be required to give up one's job. If one's going to lose one's job, we'll see, that's not the same thing. But by the way, Dama Ben Nassin is a funny case. Since when do we bring a proof from a non-Jew living in Ashkelon about Kibbud Av Va'Em? So, a lot of the Mefarshim have a lot to say about this, and the Maharal has a lot to say about this, and of course we see one of the things that a Roman Dafka living in Ashkelon, we see that there's a very strong link with Esav. Because Esav, the only mitzvah that he did, really, and he did it really well, was Kibbud Av. Okay? This guy, a bit more, he does Kibbud Aim as well. But even Esav was not too bad with the Kibbud Aim, but the Kibbud Av was his thing. So the Maharal actually even goes so far as to say, there was never such a person as Dama Ben Nassina. It's not a story about an individual person who lived in this person. Chazal are giving a medrash of somebody and putting it into the mind, if you like, into the setting of a non-Jew to learn a Kal V'Chomer from it. They're not telling a story about something that happened, but they're using a non-Jew to teach you this idea of that there's a koyach. Esav has a certain koyach of Kibbud Av, and that's something that we if we want to combat them, we have to al achat kama v'kama. We have to work on our. Everyone has a koyach. Yishmael has a koyach of Tefillah. Okay, so if you want to beat Ishmael, you have to daven better than they do. And Esav has the power of Kibbud Av Va'Em, look after their parents. So these are all things. But we don't learn directly the halachas from Dama Ben Nassina. That we certainly don't learn. And there is no such halacha that you're not allowed to wake your parents up ever. It depends on the circumstances. Okay, let's go on. Look at number 18. Yeah, any question? No, I thought you were saying something. Look at number 18. Let's look at Kovod. So Yira is respect. Not sitting in their place, not giving, making out that they're an equal, calling them by their first name, etc. So what is covered? So covered, we often use the word covered, and really we mean yira, not covered. We mean respect. That's not really what covered is. Look at number 18. Ezu kfoida, says the Shulchan Aruch, what is covered? Ma'achiloi, we provide them with food. Umashkehu, we provide them with drink. Umalbish, with clothes. Umachse, with linen. Umachis, we bring them in. Umoisi, we take them out. Whatever we do it with a smile. Interesting. But that is part of COVID. COVID is looking after your parents. And therefore really your relationship with your parents as you get older shifts gradually from one of Yira. When you're a kid, it's really one of Yira. And when you're older, it really becomes one of COVID. Obviously people who are in their teens and 20s and 30s are not usually physically looking after their parents. But people, once they hit their 50s and 60s, or 40s, 50s and 60s, are often looking after their parents. And therefore there's an interesting shift. There's a continuum shift from Yira on the one hand to Kovod on the other, and that's how it works. There is, of course, a bit of a tension sometimes. How do you do Kovod and Yira at the same time? How do you look after elderly parents and make decisions sometimes that they don't want made, if they're not making decisions for themselves in the right way, whilst at the same time maintain a child-parent relationship? This is a very, very difficult one. Not one that I can really tell you from personal experience. I'm sure you have more experience of some of that than me, but I certainly saw from my grandparents. I don't have any grandparents anymore. My last grandparent passed away. My grandmother passed away last year. But I saw the way my parents looked after my grandparents, and I saw what they had to go through. I remember one particular situation where my grandfather and grandmother on my mother's side were very, mentally very independent, but physically became very frail. Of course, everybody in their mind is still 22 years old, and my grandfather, bless him, was still, fighting the Germans in the war. He was mentally completely there, and he was, I don't need it, I'm fine, I don't need any help, I'm alright. And of course, they weren't all right. My grandfather was nearly blind and he'd had two strokes, and my grandmother was finding it hard to cope, etc. So my mother put them on a list for a sheltered accommodation, not someone who looks in on them, and they have someone coming round.
Assisted living.
How American.
Very popular.
Assisted living.
Right.
Okay. Sheltered accommodation is what we call it in England. So you know what I'm talking about.
One more guy.
Yes, the Umugan, very good. So, what happened, of course, is there's a very long waiting list. They're very, very popular, these places. Eventually, after a couple of years, they get to the top of the waiting list. So the guy in the office, for the sheltered accommodation, picks up the phone and he calls my grandfather. And he says, "I've got great news, you're on the top of the list. We've got a facility available for you, you'll be able to move in the next few weeks." So, of course, he says, "Oh no, we don't need any of that. Take us off the list. It's fine. We're doing just fine. I don't know how we got on the list anyway. We don't need it. Thank you very much. Very nice of you to call, but you can give it to the next person down." So luckily, the guy had the seichel to call my mother, who went apoplectic. And exactly how, on the one hand, you say to the parents, "You do need to move into the sheltered accommodation because I have an obligation to look after you, and I can't look after you unless there's I can't be with you 24 hours a day." On the other hand, maintaining a Yira relationship, which is, "I'm not telling you what to do," very difficult. Very, very difficult. But that's a thing that has to be kind of circumnavigated in every individual relationship. And I'm sure you all have personal examples of the way people have seen it or happened to yourself.
Did your grandparents move into the
shop? Yes, they did. They did in the end. And it was a very good move. It was a very good move, and you know something? Maybe the week that they moved in, they said, "I didn't need it 100%. But within 6 months, they needed it 100%, 1,000%. You know? And then they realized afterwards, but you know what? Nobody wants to feel that they're getting older.
My friend's mother, who lived in London, gave the mother a second life.
A whole new lease of life. It can happen.
A whole new lease on life. She was active and doing things.
That's less worries. So there's an interesting Shulchan Aruch in number 19 that also is very relevant. There comes a point when the Shulchan Aruch says the best way you can look after your parents is by bringing in a third party. And that's actually the most effective way. Interesting how he puts it. Look at number 19. Misha nitrifa das avivoy imoy. Someone whose parents have got dementia, which is much more common now than it was, of course, then. People didn't usually live long enough to get dementia, but nowadays a lot of people who are living a long time, and bodies seem to last a bit longer than minds sometimes, and people are becoming frail mentally as well as physically. So says the Shulchan Aruch, "Mishtadil linhog imahem kifi dasam, ad sheyirchum aleihem." You should try to behave with them according to how they understand. Ashiruchem aleihem, so you have rachamim on them, okay? The im ef shaloi lamoi, but if you can't take it anymore, and situations can become very, very difficult. People can, they don't know who you are, and they could even be abusive. With Alzheimer's, it can even be abusive, and of course they mean it, but it's terribly, terribly distressing. Shulchan Aruch is dealing with this case. Because they're very demented. Yelech yoivanichem, you can leave them. And you can ask someone else to come in and look after them. And the Shulchan Aruch here is trying to very sensitively balance your need to stay sane and be able to live your own life with your obligation to look after your parents, which in this case is best done through a third party, whether that's a Filipino in these days or whatever that is, or some kind of a residential facility. But the Shulchan Aruch is conscious of that. It's not like an absolute obligation that you have to look after your parents, even if it's going to drive you into the ground. And we'll see why soon. There's a very important reason why. And we're coming to that right now. Hanoi is becoming like a Filipino city. It's great. All these people. And they're such nice people as well. It's like nice to have around. But there's all these guys, of course, Filipino guys who are nearly, finishing Shas now. They're wheeling people into Daf Yomi Shurim every day. There's going to be a national CMS Shas in Filipinit. Then they'll all be taking part. But the Gemara number 20 is really getting to the crux of what we're trying to deal with, which is, how far does it really go? Because we've seen Dhamma ben Nasina, his mother spat in his face and slapped him around the head, and he just stood there and he took it all. Let's have a look. Look at number 20. Number 20 asks an interesting financial question. Very interesting question. Who has to pay? If your parents are about to go into some kind of costly residential facility, Who pays for that? Do they pay for that? Or do you pay for that? In other words, they've got money in the bank, they've saved money over the years, but they don't want to spend it. They want to give it as a Yerusha, or they want to, you know, give it to the dog's home, or whatever they want to do with it. And they say to you, look, you know, it's your mitzvah. You're the children, you know, if we need to live here, you have to pay the fees. Fees can be very, very, very high. Says the Shulchan Aruch, Iboilehu, this is actually the Gemara. The Iboilehu, we'll see the Shulchan Aruch in a minute. They asked a question in the yeshiva. Michel me means who? From who has, whose money has to be used? Rav Yehuda Amar Michel Ben, Rav Yehuda said the child's money. It's the child's mitzvah. You don't do mitzvahs with other people's money, you do mitzvahs with your money. Rav Nosson Bar Oishi Amar, no. Rav Nosson said Michel Av, the parents' money, not the child's money. Machloikas, how do we paskin? Says the Gemara, Oirele Rabbonel Rav Yirmiya Va'amrila, the braid Rav Yirmiya, the rabbis ruled on this to Rav Yirmiya, or to the son of Rav Yirmiya, commander Amar Michel Av, and we follow the view which is the parents' money. And that's the halacha. The parents' money has to be used before the child's money is used. So the Gemara asked a question on that. Meisve, it's a problem. Ne'emar kavedes avicha ve'simecha, it says you have to honor your parents. Ve'emar, and it says kaved es Hashem, Hashem mihoincha, honor Hashem with your money. So you see that the idea of honoring is applying your money. So how can I honor my parents by taking from their bank account? How did that work? Umala halam b'chisaron kis, just over there with Hashem, you have to spend money, you have to put your money where your mouth is. Afkan b'chisaron kis, here too with parents, surely not. Surely the case, isn't that the case? The Iyamad Mishal Avin, if you say I use their money, my nafkalemine, what are you putting in? What are you giving? Your parents are you taking, you got a direct debit from your parents' bank account to the nursing home. What exactly are you doing here? So the Gemara answers, Libotil Malocha. You're looking after them physically. You're giving up work, you're taking days off, you're taking time off, and you're losing potential earnings. You're losing the opportunity to earn more money. That you have to do. So in terms of effort, or in terms of loss of potential money coming in, a little bit like Dama Ben Nasina, who he wasn't losing hundreds of thousands, he was stopping, he was avoiding the opportunity of getting more. So that you have to do. But he says the Gemara, when it comes to actually spending money, the first lot of spending money has to come out of the parents' money, not your money. And the application of that is going to be very, very far reaching. Flip over to page 4, because this is going to answer the Chazon Ish's question. Listen to what the Shulchan Aruch says. The Rambam paskins clearly, number 21. Eizeh covered. What is covered? Machil, you give them food. Umashke, umalbish, umachase. Michel Ha'av, he paskins like we saw in the Gemara. From the parents' money. First you use their money. Then you come out to your money. And the Shulchan Aruch also says that. But he goes one stage further. Look at number 22 and 23. Says the Shulchan Aruch, Zeshem achilu mashkehu, when it comes to giving them food and drink, Mishal ava emits, with the mother and father's money. That's the money that gets used. Im yeshlev, if they have money. The im ein la'av, but if the parents have no money, the yeshlev ben, and the children have money, kaifin oiso, then we force the kid, v'zan aviv kifi mashehu yachal, and he has to give his parents food according to how he can afford. In other words, the pecking order is like this. First the parents' money gets used, and then the children can't say, I don't want to spend my money. They have no option. Once the parents don't have any money left, the children have to put the money in. If they've got it, becomes a point when they run out of money as well. The question is, how far does that go? So look at number 23, and you'll see the Ramah brings in a very interesting thing. Look at number 23. Al-Heichan Kibbut Ava'eim, says the Shulchan Aruch, how far do you have to go? Afilun Nat, now he brings an interesting case, based on Dama Ben Nasina. Afilun Nat Lo Kis Shel Zehuvim Shaloi. Even if the parent takes the child's money, wallet, full of gold coins. V'hishlichu b'fonav le'yam, and he throws it in front of his eyes into the sea. Lo yachlimam, you can't curse them. Lo yitzar b'fneihem, you can't get angry with them. Lo yichas k'neged them, you can't get irritated towards them. Eli yikabel gzeres akosav yishtok, you have to sit there and take it. That's a Shulchan Aruch, like paskening like the Gemara. And if it was the case, my parents come up to me, they take my wallet, they throw it in the sea. Or my parents come and I see my parents joyriding in my car. You know, they come and they're having a bit of a midlife crisis, and they decide in their 60s they're going to break into my car and, you know, joyride around the town and write my car off. Says the Gemara, says the Shulchan Aruch, can I do? It's my parents. Says the Ramah, no, that's gone too far already. It's gone too far. The Yesh Oimrim, says the Rama, there is another opinion. The Imroitzi Lizroik Mo'oshel Benlia. If your parents are trying to throw your money away, they're trying to take your money and throw your money away, the Yochalim Oinoi, then you can stop them. You can say, no, enough. That's not acceptable. Now, in a polite way, but in a, even if that's going to upset them, what do you mean no? What do you mean you're telling us no? No, you can't take my money and throw it in the sea. Why not? The ha'enu chayv lechav the rak mishel av, because we saw before your obligation to physically look after your parents, the obligation of covered physical looking after is with their money. Aval loy mishel ben, not with your money if they have money. And here are the magic six words: the ein chiluk bein lechavdoi oy letzaroi. There is no difference, says the Rama, whether it comes to the mitzvah of covered or the mitzvah of yira. And this is a very interesting extension. Remember, the mitzvah of kovod, physical, paying for what they need, it's their money first, and then my money. Says the Rama, the same applies to yira. Yira meaning what? Yira meaning, I have to do what you say. I have to respect you. I have to not upset you. I have to obey what you want me to do. I have to stand there while you, you know, insult me. Says the Rama, no. At the point at which you can turn around and say, this is beginning to come out of my money, then I don't have to put up with that. So if you're about to throw my money in the sea, I don't have to sit there while you do that. I can stop you. And if that upsets you, I'm sorry. That upsets you. It's my money you're throwing away. V'dafka, says the Ramah, koidim shizarkam. You'll see the very wide-ranging implications of this suit. V'dafka koidim shizarkam. That's, of course, before they throw the money away. They can stop them, and they won't do it. Aval im kfar zarku, but if they've already thrown your money away, so what's the point getting angry with them? What's that going to achieve? Osta la'achlimam, you can't get angry with them. Aval yochel etavol ledini, of course you can take them to Beis Din. Who says you can't take your parents to Beis Din? If they steal your money, if your parents are ganav, then of course you can take them to Beis Din. V'dafki im rotzel izrok kisliyam. That's only if they want to throw your money away. The east bay chisar on kis, you're losing out from it. If they're taking away profit, then you have to put up with it, because like we said, you're required to forego the loss of potential profit in order to do kibbut avayim, but you're not required to lose what you already have. Now, how does that work? So the poskim said a very interesting thing. It turns out, we'll see some examples of this right now, just like when it comes to the financial covered, looking after them, you can say to your parents, I'm sorry, you're in a residential home, it costs $1,000 a week, and you've got $1 million at the bank, we have to use your money before it comes to mine, and that's right. Similarly, when it comes to Yira, if your parents are asking you to do something, which is like trying to take something from you, which is your money, or your personal happiness, or something very fundamentally that's yours, you can turn around and draw a line and say, no, I'm not required to do that, I'm sorry. Kibbut avayim doesn't go that far. And this is the answer to the Chazanish's question. At the point at which the parent saying to the son, you have to marry a woman who will make you miserable, the son can turn around to the parent and say, no, I don't. Because you can't ask me to do kibbut avayim with my money. Certainly not with my happiness, with my life. You can't ask me to throw my life away in order to stop you from being upset. Because that's not how kibbut avayim works. Because it's now coming out of, quotes and quotes, my money. You see the point? And this is going to extend into a number of different areas. Look at number 24. This, yes?
What happens if you see them throwing, if they throw their money?
Ah, so that's for sure. If your parents want to blow your inheritance on a world cruise when they're in their mid-70s, then you can't stop them doing that. It's their money. They can do what they like with their money. They have no obligation to leave your Yerusha.
Let's say.
You mean they're actually
something that,
right?
That doesn't make sense.
Right. I'm not sure what the halacha is, but there, presumably your parents are doing something. What if you see your parents about to harm themselves or damage themselves or hurt themselves? So they clearly have an obligation to stop them from hurting themselves. I don't see why this will be any different, would it? I don't know. But, you know, if it's going to harm your parents for them to throw their own money away. It's not just going to harm you, because they can't live without money. Therefore, presumably, you'll be allowed to do that. I'm not entirely sure. It's an interesting question. How much would you be able to physically restrain them? Because there are other issues as well. You're not allowed to hit your parents under any circumstances. Chayv misa if you hit your parents. Or even bruise them. So there are all sorts of interesting issues that come up of people who are nurses and they need to take blood from their parents or inject their parents.
Doctors.
You know, if your parents need some kind of injection or a blood test, then the children are not the people that should do that. If there is nobody else there and the parents are in a lot of pain and the child is the only person that's able to deal with this and the parents give the permission, then the Shulchan Aruch says that they can do it. But it's really very b'dieved. It's like, it's not really...
What about a situation which is so painful to describe where a son, a mentor, breaks off relationship with the parents, has a grievance against the parents, never sees the parents, doesn't any relationship with this person's child, rabbis have talked to this person, kosher with that. You know, I think it's much more common than you may realize these kinds of, it's not just not being close.
Right. It's hard to see what justification there is in halacha for a child to treat their parent that way. Like, you can't just turn around and say theoretically, well, this applies because every situation is enormously complex but there's no mitzvah to love your parents, there's no mitzvah to even think highly of your parents, but there's a mitzvah to give them kovod, which means to treat them and to make sure that they have what they need, and there's a mitzvah of yira to make sure that they feel that they're being respected as parents on some level. But again, you don't have to agree with them on everything, and you don't have to it's hard to understand.
If a parent dies and there is a remarriage, now that may live a little bit, but not to ever see the parent.
So we're going to get to step parents in a minute. There's a halacha midoraisa about step parents. We're going to see how that works. Yeah, we're going to see that in a few minutes. Let's just go on for now. Look at number 24. Look at number 24. The Maharik of Yosef Kolon in the 1400s was after Shaila. Do I have to marry the woman my dad wants me to marry? And he turns around and he says as follows, number 24. Va'asha nistabak, to your question, he says, im yesh koyach, if there's the power, b'yad ha'av, in the father's hands, limchois b'yad b'noi, to stop his son, li'isa isha ashe yichpats bo, haben, to marry the woman that he loves, that he wants to marry, la'fi ani astaiti, my opinion is, nira she'im, let's see what he says here, im hi isha ha'hoigenet loin, if the girl the son wants to marry is a woman who is suitable for him, and therein lies the $64,000 question, what does that mean, suitable for him? She'ein koyach b'yad ha'av limchois b'yad ha'ben, then the father can't object to her just because the father doesn't like it. Why? It says, chada, number one, da'afid le'inyin mamam, even when it comes to money, oydi le'rabon le'rebi yirimiyah kamanda amam shalav, everybody agrees that use the parents' money rather than the children's money. That's the psak of everyone that I've seen. Kol shekein, all the more so, hacha here, shehudava hashayach betzara digufoi. It's a very serious personal pain. And he gets quite poetical here. Lahaniach ha'isha, to leave behind the woman, asher chofotzba, that you love, v'yitztarech lekachas isha acheres, and have to marry another woman, asher lo tiyasha be'enach kokach, who is not so suitable to you in your eyes. He says, therefore, as long as the woman is quote-unquote suitable on some objective level, the parents don't really have the ability to object. So what does that mean, suitable? So obviously, if the kid says, he turns around and says, I want to marry a non-Jewish girl, then clearly, you know, that's not suitable. That's an aveira in and of itself. And the reason you can't marry a non-Jewish person is not because it's a problem of kibbutz aver aim. It's a problem of itself. But there's also a kibbutz aver aim issue. How can you do that to your parents? But if the kid, I don't know, if the parents are Hasidish and the kid becomes like mega anti-Hasidish, you know, and if the parent, if you don't eat, if you eat gebrochs on Pesach, it's like a family betrayal. You know, there are such families. And the kid says, no, I'm not into that. I want to marry this. I want to marry a modern Orthodox girl. If the girl's a nice girl, she's a suitable mate, a match, and the parents turn around and say, I'll never be able to talk to my friends again. So the answer is, maybe you need to find some new friends. But I mean, obviously, you can't say that. Obviously, you have to be polite. But you don't have to marry a person just because your parents have a hang up about it. comes a point when it becomes, why is that? And that's not just because of common sense. It's because of Michel Av and Michel Ben. When your parents are asking you to give up something which is really part of me, how can you do that? The way Rav Berkowitz once explained to me is your parents are trying to give you independence. That's what parents are trying to do to kids. They're trying to persuade, to show them how they should be independent people. To give independence with the one hand, and then to take it back with the other hand, you can't do that. That's not how it works. Now, what is really something is, I had a girl, I had a conversation with her. She's not very happy at the moment in one of the places that I teach. So it turns out one of the things that, the last thing her mother told her before she got on the plane to come to Israel to seminary is, you make sure you never wear a denim skirt. Okay?
You make sure you never wear a denim skirt.
So this girl's feeling a little bit bitter that the only thing her mother's really bothered about in Israel is that she never wears the denim skirt, obviously. She's trying to work out how does this leave her with her parents? So is it a problem of kibbutz av ha'em if she wants to wear a denim skirt? So the truth is, like, on the surface, look, your parents don't want you to wear a denim skirt, don't wear a denim skirt. But there comes a point that if your parents are trying to tell you, I want you to be a different person than the person that you think you are. Obviously, if the kid's like 9 years old, then of course what do the parents say? But if the person, this is an 18-year-old girl, she wants to be X, she grew up Y, and she doesn't want to, you know, dance around the Himalayas and, you know, become a Buddhist. She wants to be, you know, a little bit of a different style of a person to the parents who brought her up in a very, you know, this is how everybody is kind of mentality. There comes a point when kibbutz av ha'em does not require her to listen anymore. Because they're stopping her from being who she is.
What about one of our students said that before she left, her mother made a sign of contract that she would never cover her hair and she would never, she wouldn't stop wearing trousers.
She made a sign of contract?
Yeah, because she didn't want to come back religious.
Fine. Okay, so that's very straightforward. That's source number 26. says the Shulchan Aruch, Amar loy aviv, if your parents instruct you, la'avor al divrei Torah, to break any mitzvah, bein mitzvahs aseh, bein mitzvahs lo aseh, with a positive or negative mitzvah, hafilu mitzvah shel divreihem, even a rabbinic mitzvah, lo yishma loy, do not have to listen to them. Do not have to listen to them. You can't make a contract against the Torah.
It's an unenforceable contract.
It's an unenforceable contract. There are Mishnayos galore that deal with the fact that if somebody makes a Tanai, if somebody makes a condition in any deal that is going to require them to break the Torah, the condition has no validity whatsoever. Sure. Now, should she...
Yeah, but it's the Torah, but if the parents decide to take the contract and go to a civil court...
That's assuming,
no,
you know?
But they wouldn't, but I'm saying then she...
It's probably unenforceable in civil law as well.
Yeah, but... What I'm saying is that then she'll have her parents and maybe break relationships with them and then...
So look, you know...
Whatever.
The question is more a question of strategy.
Yeah.
Should she have been advised to sign the contract, which is meaningless, go to her year in Israel, and then they will argue about it later.
That's what she did.
Which is probably the right strategic advice. Or make a stand, and I'm not signing a contract like this.
No, if she didn't sign a contract.
That she wouldn't be in Israel at all.
Yeah.
This is usually the Shana Bet argument. You know, my parents have told me I can only come for Shana Aleph on condition I can't go for Shana Bet. So what you're going to do is scream and shout before you get to Shana Aleph? No, you can scream and shout at the end of Shana Aleph and work it out then. But the truth is that and I'm not necessarily someone who is a big Shana Bet fan always. Sometimes it's very, very helpful. For girls it is. For boys it's a no-brainer. But for girls, it sometimes is useful and sometimes it's a bit of a waste of time. But depending on the individual. I don't think there's any big mitzvah to waste your parents' money. But the point is like this. Your parents can't ask you to give up your Olam Haba. They've got no business to ask that. That's Michel Ben,
okay,
for sure.
Okay, but this girl doesn't... understand her Olam Haba because she doesn't have a spiritual understanding of that.
I understand.
And therefore she says, I don't want to break relationships with my parents.
She's right.
So therefore, I'll do what they tell me to do because she comes from a Persian, not religious family, and this is very important for her parents. So therefore, I won't keep the mitzvahs that they don't want me to keep. So I said, maybe you should, you know, start with keeping Shabbos rather than start with,
right.
I'm definitely going to cover my hair.
Right.
I'm not even there yet, but...
Look,
you don't understand the spiritual.
Of course, in all of these areas, there are you have to overcompensate. I get this. You get this a lot with Shomana Gia things. Like girls come to seminary and they say, like, if I go back home and I don't hug my cousin Jimmy, my parents are going to go absolutely ballistic because they're going to say you've turned into a completely, you know, off the planet, and how does that work? So of course you've got to, certain things you have to make a stand over, but then you've got to overcompensate in other areas. You've got to because parents just think you're being difficult, and you've got to go shopping even when you don't want to go shopping, and you've got to do things for your parents which, you know, over and above to overcompensate. I'm sure this is what you tell them, that to overcompensate in the other areas where you can, to make it clear that you're not just being difficult and you're not just being problematic, and you're doing this because you really believe in it. And look, it's very difficult. At a certain age, you're trying to find yourself. And a lot of these girls have been quite sheltered when they've been raised. And they're not like, you know, it's gone a little bit too far in outside society. Every 12-year-old already is like, is off, is not interested. He's got his own, you know, PC and his own life and his own this and his own that. That's obviously too far. But there comes a point where 18, 19, when your parents are still saying, your skirt has to be this long and this color and this material and this, this and this, that, you have to turn around and say, you know, this is too much already. Certainly when it comes to Averis, when it comes to marriage, but other areas as well. Look at number 27. The parent says, you mustn't speak to this person. We don't speak to them anymore. We don't speak to these people anymore. We've had a row with them. We had an argument with them. Not to forgive someone, Abzman Kotzer, for a certain amount of time. And the son's got nothing against this person. The son says, I've got nothing against Uncle Jimmy. Okay? Why should I fall out with Uncle Jimmy? Because you fell out with Uncle Jimmy. Says the Shulchan Aruch. The son does not have to listen to the parent. That's also asking you to do an Aveira. The parent can't ask you to do an Aveira by not speaking to X person. You're not allowed to not speak to people. They upset the parent. Okay, that's a separate issue. Maybe they have to deal with it. Maybe in front of the parent, it's not very sensitive to go, oh, hi, you know, when you know the parent doesn't like. Obviously, that's a lack of sensitivity. But if a parent says he doesn't want to speak to a grandparent, this happens. Parents fall out with their parents. And they say, we don't speak to grandpa or my grandma anymore. Well, if you don't speak to grandma, that's one thing. But I still speak to grandma. And you get this in divorce situations, very complicated arrangements with step parents and this and that. I don't want you to speak to your father's new wife. She's, you know, this is not, your parents can't ask you to do this. Similarly with Talmud Torah number 28, Talmud Torah Godel Mikibud Avaim, the Shulchan Aruch says explicitly Talmud Torah overrides Kibud Avaim. And look at 29, Talmud, Shiroitze Aleches Lamakam Acher, if a Talmud wants to go to a place to learn, Shehu Boiteach, where they are sure, Sheyira Simon Brocha B'Talmudo Lifnei HaRav Shasham. They will succeed more learning there. They want to go to seminary in Jerusalem. And the parents say, we don't want you to go to seminary in Jerusalem. Why can't you go to seminary in Monsi? It's nice in Monsi. And they say, no, it's not. It's nice in Monsi, but it's not Yerushalayim. Says the Shulchan Aruch, V'aviv Moicheboy, and the parents object. Why? Not because they're difficult. Because they're worried. They're worried. Parents have never changed, you know. Parents have always worried. In the place that the kid wants to go, the goyim are dangerous. There are bus bombs. There are suicide bombers. You don't go. You don't have to listen to the parents.
The parents
don't have to pay, do they? The parents don't have an obligation in halacha to pay. The parents could turn around to the kid and say, well, if you insist on going to Jerusalem, you better get on your bike and earn some money. Because we're not paying. That's entirely reasonable. And by the way, if the parents... we used to have this Shaila a few years ago. A lot of parents told their kids, you can go to Jerusalem, but you can't go on the bus.
Yeah.
A lot. A few years ago, this was Baruch Hashem. These days, it's much less common.
And the girls don't have money to go.
The girls don't have money. So I asked, you know, Rebecca, and I asked the Poskim, talked about this. So what is the halacha? So it's posh. If the parents give the kid a small allowance, and the parents say to the kid, look, this is your money, oh, by the way, you need to take cabs, and you can't take any buses, then that's not something that the child has to listen to, because it's Michelle Av, not Michelle Ben. You can't ask me to do kibbutz av aim for you on an issue like this, and expect me to use my money to do that. We already saw in the halacha that the kibbutz of aim comes from your money. If you want, the parent wants to give them an allowance of $1,000, this is for the cabs. Then that's a different shaila. But without that money, there's nothing much to talk about. I mean, why? Apart from the question as to whether it's a reasonable request or a not reasonable request, and the parents living in LA, they have no clue what's going on. They've looked at CNN, they've seen a picture of Baghdad, they say that's the Middle East, and therefore, you know, what difference does it make? Baghdad, Jerusalem, it's all the same. And I had a conversation, I had a girl, if I mentioned this last time, it's funny but it's not funny, I had a girl who was not allowed to come to seminary at all. Eventually she persuaded her parents that she would be allowed to come to seminary. They insisted that she had to do something non-religious too. She actually had to go to like Ulpan or something like that. She agreed, fine. So they eventually they got to Tel Aviv. It was during the war in Gaza just now. They were in Tel Aviv. I got a phone call from the girl in a, like, my father will not let me leave Tel Aviv. I've been kind of kidnapped by my parents. And he won't let me come to Jerusalem. Why? Because it's dangerous in Jerusalem. Why is it dangerous in Jerusalem? I don't know. But then he thinks it's dangerous in Jerusalem because there's a war in Gaza. And what's more, he's asked his secular Israeli cousins in Tel Aviv, and they also think it's dangerous in Jerusalem. Because they've never been to Jerusalem, probably. And they wouldn't dream of going to Jerusalem. So he's saying to her, look, if even the Israelis say it's dangerous in Jerusalem, it must be dangerous in Jerusalem. And she's saying to me, what kind of am I going to do here? So this was a very delicate situation. You know, I offered to go to Tel Aviv to speak to the father, what have you. In the end, he allowed her to come to Jerusalem. He allowed her only to go to certain places in Jerusalem. You know, it's a very tricky situation negotiating these things. Now, of course, one thing that your father told me once, which is very true, which is if the parents pay money for the year and say this money is given to you on condition that you don't get the bus, then you can't get the bus, because then there's a financial contract in place. And that is a binding contract. He's not asking you to do an aveira, he's saying this money is coming to you on a certain condition, and you have to stick to the conditions. Then if you want to ignore your parents, you have to be prepared to pay the money back. That's not on. But let's say the parents don't give the money. Or let's say the parents do give the money, but they don't make it a condition. And the kid's turning around in the middle of the year and saying, this is ridiculous. I can't go out with my friends. I can't go on Tulim. Everywhere I go, I have to get cabs. And anywhere the cabs, you get in a cab in the middle of the night in East Jerusalem. You know, is it safer in a cab or is it safer on a bus? Safer on a bus. So, you know, do I have to listen? And there comes a point when if the parent's really asking the kid to give up something important to the kid, then even if the parent gave them money, it's not so straightforward that they have to still get the cabs rather than the buses. Because they're asking them to give something up. Now, if they made it a condition, that's different. But if they didn't, it's not such a straightforward shaila.
Are they allowed to lie?
That's a good question. Yeah, it's a good question.
My mother had it once, many, many years ago. She was on a bus here, and she meets this young lady that she knew from Florida, and she's talking to her. Yeah, oh, she's in a seminary, wonderful and great. My mother goes back down to Florida and meets the girl's mother and tells her, oh, I met your daughter, and we are on a bus. And the mother called up the girl, get on a plane now, you...
Right.
I told you cannot get on the buses. And this was even before the intifadas.
Right.
But the mother had told her she cannot get on a bus.
Did the girl go home?
She had no choice.
Wow.
I had the shoes that are coming on your eyes.
Interesting. Just shows you that sometimes it's better not to say who you saw.
Mm-hmm.
I had a situation, very interesting. I worked for a while when I was a lawyer. There were 2 or 3 months when I worked in Paris. And I had a deal with a big French company, and I was commuting to Paris. I was staying Monday to Thursday in Paris, and I was coming back for Shabbos and that kind of thing. Anyway, I took out my clients. You know, there were a lot of kosher restaurants and things. There was one particular case on the day when I was flying back to England. I was with a client in a restaurant in Paris having dinner, and my wife knew before I got back home to London that I'd been in that restaurant with someone for dinner, because someone walked past the window, saw me in the restaurant. Lucky the person I was with was 60 years old and bald and male. But you know, but I'd been told, my wife said, oh yes, you were in such and such for dinner this evening. New people think, oh, I saw your husband with, it's a small world, especially in the Jewish world. I suppose if you want to be incognito, I suppose the answer is don't go to a kosher restaurant. But
you know. Well, Elsa's son was born on Shabbos morning, so the husband
he lived 1.5 hours, about 45 minutes walk away from my parents. So after the, he was one, he was born at 6:20 in the morning. My husband walked back to my parents, told them they'd just become grandparents. And he went to shul with my father. And then in the afternoon, my parents came to visit me. My husband was resting, because he'd been up all night. And then later on Shabbos, my husband walked back, like, to dash the shit time. It was in the summer in England, so.
Right.
Nice and late. So he came back later on. After Shabbos, from the hospital, he called his parents to tell them, and they already knew.
Right.
How did they know? My sister, who was then single, living in her parents' house, was at my cousin's Shabbos Kala. She'd walked over to Hendon.
Okay. I think I'm going to start writing this down.
No, she walked to Shabbos Kala. She told somebody who was a cousin in the, she just became an aunt and I just had a baby that morning. The cousin told her father, who davened with my husband's grandfather, in shul on Shabbos for Menachem Maariv. It got back to his parents before he even had a chance to call them.
There's an expression in the Gemara, Chavri Islay, Vachavri the Chavri Islay. The next door neighbor has a friend, and his friend has a friend, and, you know, things work in this way. Have a look at the legacy in the last 5 minutes, in the last few sources. Source number 30 is a very important source. Osa, says Shulchan Aruch, Osa la'adam la'achbid oiloi al-banov. A parent is not allowed to be too strict on his children. Not allowed. Osa. Well, a gachdeik b'kvoido imahem, and to insist on receiving the appropriate honor. Shaloi la yaviem l'day michshos, so that you won't put them off. You won't drive them off the derech, he says. Eliyim choil, you should forgive. V'yalim einav behem, and learn to turn a blind eye. Turning a blind eye is a very effective parenting tool in certain situations.
In
certain situations. You know, again, as your father once said, selective hearing is an important thing in community rabbonas. But the Shulchan Aruch paskens that. The Shulchan Aruch paskens that a parent has to turn a blind eye to something. She'ha'av she'mochal ha'kvoide kvoide mochal. And this is not just parental advice, this is halachic advice. There are three kinds of people, a melech, a rav, and a parent. A melech is not allowed to be moichel on his kavod under any circumstances. And when the situations where we see in Tanakh that they were, it ended in tears. It's Shaul HaMelech, etc. A rav is allowed to be moichel on his kavod, but should very rarely do so, because he should realize it's the kavod of the Torah, really not his kavod. But sometimes it's appropriate. And a parent is encouraged to be moichel on their kavod.
Because you don't want to put something back in front of your child.
Correct.
You don't want to keep giving them others.
Correct. And this is in a time where parents and children were, you know, like this. Even then, the last word on other relatives. Interestingly, the Pasuk has a couple of extra words, number 31. Kaved es avicha ve es imecha. What does the es do? So, of course, on a pshat level, the es doesn't do anything. It just means, you know, nothing. It's a grammatical form. But we see in halacha that it does. It includes step-parents. Source number 32, which I'm not going to go into in detail, we see from this source that the es is, the word es in Hebrew also means with, as in bo'iti. Yeah, so it can be translated on a drash level, on a deeper level, as honor with your father and with your mother. What does that mean, with your father? Who goes with your father? Your father's wife. It's not your mother. She's already in the pasuk. And who goes with your mother? Your mother's husband. So you learn out from here that there is an obligation min hatorah to give cover to step parents as a result of the relationship with a natural parent. So a stepfather is entitled to cover because he's married to your mother. When the natural parent dies, the Shulchan Aruch rules. Well, look at number 33. Chayv adam lechaved eishes aviv. Person has to give cover to his stepmother. Afa pisha'enu imo, even if not his real mother. Because man she aviv kaim, as long as the father's alive. Chayv lechaved baal imo, because man she imo kayemes. Aval acha misa, after the natural parent dies, eino chayv bichvoidam. He's not chayv to give cover to the step parents. Again, this is covered, not yira. This is covered. Covered means the obligation to look after you, etc. They're allowed to call a step parent by their first name. They're allowed to, you know, they don't have a locus of standing up and sitting in their seat and all that gets covered. When we call Mokum Davahogan Lechabdo Avla Achamisi, it's good to give them covered after the natural parent has died as well, etc. There's a special halacha about oldest. Yes, because even though the natural parent is not alive anymore, this person was married to your parents and therefore is something a little bit special. 100%. Not strictly speaking, but there again, Shiva, a lot of the halakhas of Shiva are flexible in many ways, but you don't have to Shiva as that parent.
I know people who have wonderful stepmothers. It's terrible, all the fairy tales you read. Yes. They have wonderful people that they
correct.
Have after the natural parent passed away. Stepmother, even it has a pejorative sense.
Yes, it does. It does. In halacha, it's just called eish. Chogeget. You see, in halacha, it's not called chogeget. It's called eishes aviv, my father's wife, and that has a very coveted kind of feel to it. The truth is, in the old days, it was very common because women died often in childbirth, and people died for all sorts of diseases, and there were a lot of people remarrying and all sorts of things. I was giving a shir on the Chacham Tzvi. And you know, his wife was killed by this, and his son was killed. In those days, it was Baruch Hashem. These days, it's much less so. There's also a halacha with older siblings as well.
Suppose that, somebody has remarried when their children were very young. I know somebody whose parents, her second husband,
right.
And the daughter is a friend of mine, and they've been married over 50 years.
Right.
And she's been.
He's effectively the father.
Yes.
Yes.
And she doesn't have to sit shiva.
Well, so look, she doesn't have an obligation to sit shiva, but that doesn't mean she's not allowed to sit in the house and receive people. And when someone is exempt from sitting shiva, it doesn't mean that they have to, you know, get on with their life and forget about it.
Right.
It means that they're exempt. But if they want to have a period of time when people are coming round and dealing with them in that way, there's nothing
wrong.
She
doesn't even remember her
much. Right. Right. Look at the last couple of sources and we'll finish. What about in-laws? Oh. So as long as you understand
that, parents, you have to do.
Right, so we see various people in the Tanakh who have great kavod for their in-laws. Particularly I brought in 35 Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu has enormous kavod for his in-laws, even though his father-in-law is also not what you call a model father-in-law. He's a pagan priest, you know, nonetheless, who is not even Jewish, and not even, you know, he might be interested, but he's like, you can imagine, his father-in-law must have had some interesting views on life that Moshe Rabbeinu didn't agree with. In addition to which, David HaMelech had a father-in-law that rampaged around the country trying to kill him for most of the time, and yet he still calls his father-in-law Avi. He's respectful to his father-in-law at every single juncture. So we see people being very respectful to their in-laws, and we don't find this sort of notion in Tanakh that the in-laws are the enemy, even though of course they are, but no, they're not really. They're not really.
Especially if the children see that. I feel very strongly about that.
Right, back in for the grandchildren.
I mean, we're both only children, but it's very important. I felt this. I felt that the children saw how my husband acted, and I think it's very important.
Yes, I agree.
But they will have followed that example, not what you tell them. They follow what you do.
Yes, a chinuch with kibud av ha'im is not give grandpa a cup of tea. It's you give your father a cup of tea, and the kids see you give your father a cup of tea, and then they'll give you a cup of tea. It works that way. The Shulchan Aruch Paskins is 36. Chayv adam lechabed chamiv. He has to give his father-in-law covered, but again, it's not Yira. It's not an obligation of Yira, which means that you're allowed to call them by their first names if they want it. Obviously, you're allowed to. You don't have the same kind of distance. You know, my parents immediately asked my wife to call them by their first names. They're very informal people, and my wife was fine with that, and that's what happened. My in-laws, we never worked out what to call them. And we still never worked out what to call them until we had kids. Now they're grandma and grandpa, and that's nice and easy. Everyone agrees with that. But for the years between when we married and had children, I didn't call them anything.
But what's going to happen to that when you have grandchildren? How are you going to feel when you have your children get married?
Right. So I'll probably tell them to call me by my first name, or I'll tell them,
mom and dad, no?
Or mom and dad, or something like that, or something like that. Maybe not first names. I'm not really a first name person. I've got my own mum and dad. They're not mum and dad.
My son will not call me anything. Because at this point, he's Taimani. And they are used to calling everybody by their first name. And after that is Kavod. In our family, no way.
I think I'd feel unhappy being called by my first name, by my son-in-law, daughter-in-law. But I wouldn't want to be called Rabbi Manning. That would be ridiculous.
Some people can't call
an in-law, a mom. Some people have lost a parent. I
right.
A who was a young woman, 18 or 17, when she lost her mother. She couldn't bring herself to call anybody
right.
else mom.
It's like so intruding on them.
So she had a child, and then she called her grandma.
Yeah.
And her husband didn't object. But here's a special case. This woman was...
Okay, so every case is a special case. I mean, my in-laws wanted to be called Ma and Pa. I thought that was just a bit silly.
Ma and Pa?
Ma and Pa.
It's lovely.
It's all right.
So warm.
Ma and Pa. But I don't know. We worked. In the end, it was fine. Everyone was happy. I just kind of avoided the issue. But,
There's no halachic problem.
No, with first names.
You know
in-laws. No.
First
names? No, there's no halachic problem.
It's a mitzvah.
Look, if they get offended by it, obviously it is a halachic problem.
Yeah.
But that's the same with everybody. Yeah. But there's no intrinsic halachic problem. That is a halacha in Yira, and Yira is only a halacha with parents, not with in-laws.
Not with in-laws.
Not with in-laws. It's a din of kovet, not a din of Yira. And grandparents, I brought you with the end, the Shulchan Aruch Paskins, so there's a mitzvah of kovet with grandparents as well. But parents take priority. Mm-hmm. Parents take priority over grandparents. But there is a halachic obligation of grandparents. If there's a conflict between what my parents need and what my grandparents need, then my parents take priority over my grandparents.
If the in-laws want you to call them or don't want you to call them, you have to follow
them. Well, it's the same as anyone. If a person comes up and says to me, I prefer you to call me Mrs. Cohen rather than, you know, Hannah, I'm going to call him Mrs. Cohen. So I have to lerecha kamocha. You know, I would want someone to call me what I want to be called. I should call them what they want to be called.
If your in-laws, if your like daughter-in-law, son-in-law, whatever, they said the mother-in-law, the father-in-law say, I want to be called like you said, Ma and Pa.
Right.
They have an obligation.
I don't know. I do an obligation to call them Ma and Pa. I don't know. I don't know the chiyuv to call them by their name. What if they? I don't know if it's a chiyuv. It may be a chiyuv not to call them by the name they don't want to be called,
right.
But to call them by a specific name they do want to be called. Maybe it would at a certain point if they feel strongly about it. But I don't know.
This is terrific. I can't imagine how many letters to the editor I've seen in my papers, like the Jewish press through the years, about this kind of situation.
Oh yeah, what do they say?
Well, I remember Rebbe to have an SGO.